All right, welcome. My name is Divine. This is episode 654 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And in today's podcast, I'm going to be tackling the topic that I like to title the Clutch Health Insurance Podcast. The Clutch Health Insurance Podcast. Basically, my goal here is to really talk you through health insurance in the US so that basically whatever scenario you see on your exams, you're ready for it. All right, so let's. So this is going to be part one because I want to make sure I break this down so you really understand it. Right. The American health insurance system, oh my goodness, has way too many nooks and crannies, right? And I know some of you may be thinking that, Divine, come on, they don't care about the stuff on the USMLEs. I went to medical school to take care of patients, you know, not worry myself with insurance. Well, number one, they do test it on the USMLE exams. That's the first thing. Number two, you may not be thinking about it much as a medical student now, but I promise you, when you become a resident, when you become an attending, you want to get paid, I would really hope you know quite a bit about insurance, right? Knowledge is certainly power here. All right, so the thing is, the USMLEs, they test this stuff a lot, right? And believe it or not, these things, they make them clinical questions, right? So this is something you want to make sure you understand, right? So like, for example, they can give you a question about a 65-year-old person that has chest pain, right? And then, you know, ask you which medications are covered, right? Or they will describe a child who did not get the vaccines. You know, this child didn't get their vaccines. And then they ask you like, this is most likely a failure of which of the following insurance programs, right? Or they will show you a physician, you know, getting paid. You know, they will make it like a long, elaborate question. They will show you a physician getting paid, you know, the same amount, whether the patient improves or not, right? And then they ask you like, hey, which this reflects, these physician payments reflect what kind of payment model, right? So you need to make sure you know the stuff, right? Again, they can just make so many integrations with this, right? So I think really today I want to, for this podcast, I want to start off talking about like the landscape of insurance and basically kind of talk about like public insurance, right? Because again, that's pretty heavily tested on the exams, right? So we know that the US, you know, unlike some countries that we see, right, there's no single national health system, right? Just no. Right? Coverage comes from many different places, right? And the thing is, understanding this is foundational to understanding health insurance. That's just the truth, right? It's foundational to understanding health insurance, right? So there are basically like three groups of people, right? There's public insurance, there's private insurance, and there's people that have no insurance, right? So you're either insured by the public or insured privately, or you have no insurance, right? So public insurance, it covers about 1/3 of Americans, right? About 36% of Americans, right? And what are the big things to know here? Medicare and Medicaid. It was created like in the 60s, you know, to cover a lot of people, right? And then under this Medicare and Medicaid, or somewhat related to Medicare and Medicaid, there's also this thing called the CHIP program, the CHIP program, the Children's Health Insurance Program. Basically, like, who does it cover? It basically covers kids till about age 19, right? Covers kids that, you know, their parents earn too much for them to be eligible for Medicaid, but they don't earn so much that they can afford private insurance, right? So basically, like, you earn too much for Medicaid as a family, but you can't afford private insurance. You want to cover your kids till age 19. CHIP is where it's at. And then don't forget, right, TRICARE is for people that are, you know, like active duty military. And then there is VA healthcare for veterans, right? Those are two other public systems. And then what is the biggest pot of money that covers health insurance in the US is going to be private insurance, right? It's going to be private insurance. It covers about, you know, more than 50% of Americans, you know, literally more than half of Americans, about 54%, right? And the majority of that is employer sponsored. Whenever you see a person that has private insurance in the US, it's from their employer. It's literally from their employer, right? Now, there are some key terms I think are kind of useful to know here so that when you're reading questions, you don't feel completely out of place, right? Number one is the premium. Right? So what's your premium? Your premium is basically what you pay every month or every paycheck so that you can have that insurance. And then what is your deductible? Well, your deductible is what you pay out of pocket before insurance kicks in, right? When you have private insurance, they almost always will have some kind of deductible where it's like, hey, you got to pay this amount of money before the insurance will kick in. That amount of money you pay is what is called the deductible, right? And then what are copays? You've probably heard of this term, copays, copayment. What is it? Well, basically, these are fees per visit, right? These are fees per visit. It's like something that is just like mandated. You pay this amount per visit, per healthcare visit. And then what is co-insurance? Well, co-insurance is basically the percent you pay after you've paid your deductible, right? So let's say, for example, your insurance bill is $10,000, right? And your deductible is $1,000, right? So you need to pay $1,000 before your health insurance kicks in. So you're left with $9,000. So that $9,000, your insurance company is going to pick up some of the tab, but your co-insurance may be 10%. So that means, oh, from that $9,000 remaining, 10% of it is my responsibility. You know, in this case, it's going to be $900, right? It's going to be $900, right? But the thing is, many of these insurance plans, well, at least good, or as you're going to learn when you try to get insurance, not all insurance is the same, right? So the thing is, but the good legit insurance policies, right? They have an out-of-pocket maximum, right? So it's basically like a ceiling. It's like, hey, once you hit this maximum, the insurer is going to pay 100%. It's going to pay 100%, right? So we said that public insurance covers about 36% of Americans. Private insurance covers about 54% of Americans, right? So that's about 90%. So how about the remaining 10%? Well, the remaining 10% are people that have no insurance, right? So about 8 to 10% of Americans, they have like literally like no coverage, right? And the thing is, many times when our friends at the MBMEs test this concept, they test it in the context of health equity, right? They test it as a health equity issue, right? Now, again, just to really, really draw this in, right? Remember I said that CHIP, right, specifically targets kids up to age 19 in families where, you know, their incomes are like between like 100 to 200% of the federal poverty level, right? So, and the threshold varies by state, right? But this is just a nice general guideline. But these people, they make too much money to be eligible for Medicaid, but they cannot really afford private insurance, right? So if they give you a question about, like, they give you a vignette on your exams, describes a child, and this child has no coverage, right? You know, and the parents, you know, it's a working parent household, right? And they earn too much. And they tell you in the question that they are not eligible for Medicaid. And then they say, oh, which of the following health insurance programs would provide care for this patient? Go ahead and pick the answer that talks about the children's health insurance program. They can make that a pediatric question on your exams. All right. Again, I know you may think that these things may never be tested on your exams. Until you see it, your mouth drops. You're like, wait, what? Where did this come from? Well, you knew where that came from, right? So again, they love to make these integrations, right? And the thing is, these are things that test-taking strategy is not going to help you with. If you don't know these concepts, you're going to get the question wrong, right? It's one of those, you either know it or you don't kind of deals, right? And the thing is, if you know it, you earn the credit. You get your free points, right? You get your free points. These are usually things where if you just know it, it's easy. They don't make the questions too challenging. All right. So now let's talk about Medicare, right? Let's talk about Medicare, right? Medicare is one of the big parts that we see with public insurance, right? So Medicare is probably one of the one of the highest yield payers you need to know on your exams, right? And you need to know the different parts code, right? But I think the first thing we need to discuss here is who in the world is eligible for Medicare? Like literally who? You know, classically everybody knows age 65 and older, right? But the USMLEs, they know that everybody that has the job description, USMLE exam taker knows that. So what do? They like to test some of the people that don't meet those strict definitions, but still qualify for Medicare. So who are these people? Well, it's going to be people under 65, right? That have permanent disabilities, you know, and they've received like Social Security disability insurance for like 24 months, they certainly qualify for Medicare, right? And then people of any age, so even if you're like 15 years old, but you have end-stage renal disease, you qualify for Medicare. People of any age, if you have ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, you also qualify for Medicare, right? I'll say of all these ones, the end-stage renal disease one is one that they really, really love to test, right? So they'll give you a question about some person that has, they'll give you a question about some person that, you know, has like some kind of nephrotic or nephritic syndrome that has proceeded to end-stage renal disease, right? Especially the really bad prognosis ones like FSGN, right? And they tell you that the person, you know, cannot afford insurance and which of the following would, you know, most likely cover this person. Pick the answer that talks about Medicare. And I can promise you they'll make that person under age 65 on your exams so that you don't think about that, right? So now let's talk about the different parts of Medicare, right? So the first part we're going to talk about is Part A, right? Part A. And I'm going to give you some mnemonics that may help you here, right? So Part A, remember AI, right? Part A covers inpatient care. It covers inpatient care. It covers more stuff than that, but let's that's the nice mnemonic I like to give it to people, right? Give people part A, inpatient care, right? So part A, it covers inpatient hospital care, right? Care that you get in a skilled nursing facility after a qualifying, you know, hospital stay, covers your stay in hospice, right? Covers some home health services. That's covered by part A, right? And the thing is, part A, for most people, you don't have to pay a premium. You don't have to pay a premium, right? So you're like, Divine, okay, so how did the pot of money get generated for part A? Well, it's from payroll taxes, right? You earned it from payroll taxes, right? You worked all throughout your life, you kept paying payroll taxes. Well, surprise, surprise, that's where that comes from, right? But the thing is, for part A, there is a deductible per benefit period, right? And if you have an extended hospital stay, there's going to be daily copays for that. But again, I don't sweat too much about those details, right? The key things to know is just that part A covers hospital inpatient care, skilled nursing facility care, right? Hospice care, home health care, right? So if they give you an end of life question and they ask what part of Medicare is covering that, it's going to be part A. Right, it's going to be part A, right? And remember, I said that it covers skilled nursing facility, skilled nursing facilities. This is really important, right? Typically, there's two things you want to keep at the back of your mind with this. Well, number one is that you must have had a qualifying inpatient hospital stay, right? So you cannot just like not have gone to an inpatient setting and then go straight to a skilled nursing facility and then think Medicare will cover it. Medicare Part A is not going to cover that, right? So the thing is, you must have had an inpatient hospital stay for at least 3 consecutive days. For at least 3 consecutive days, right? And then you can go to a SNF, right? Again, the thing is, you may think that understanding these things is not helpful, but you're going to see when you start practicing medicine that there are some of these games you play so that you can get your patients the care they need, so that you can get your patients the coverage that they need, right? Like if a patient stays in the hospital for one day, Part A is not going to cover them, right? So sometimes you have to do some engineering, if you know what I mean, to make things happen. But I'm not going to say anything beyond that. Again, I'm not promulgating anything. I'm just explaining the rules and regulations. All right. So, and just keep in mind, right? Look at the term skilled nursing facility. The care has to be skilled, right? So it has to require some kind of nurse or some kind of therapist, right? Not just like custodial help, right? So it has to be like skilled, like a skilled nursing facility, right? A place that, you know, requires healthcare professionals to administer the services, right? And the thing is, I know you may be like, wow, so if I'm in a skilled nursing facility, Medicare just pays forever? No, they don't, right? First 20 days, they pay, typically, again, you don't need to probably worry about this for exams, but the first 20 days, they pay 100%, no problem, right? Days 21 to 100, they pay a daily co-insurance. You, the patient, right? So Medicare is still covering the tab for most of it, but you have to start paying a certain percent of the amount. And then after day 100, that's it. That's it. Medicare pays nothing. Medicare pays nothing, right? Literally, after day 100, Medicare pays nothing, right? So they can give you a question about like an elderly patient recovering from a hip fracture, right? And then the person is told after 3 months, right, that Medicare is not going to cover her SNF, right? After 3 months, you know, about 90 to 100 days, right? And then what happens next, right? You'll see, you know, which of the following best represents how the patient will be able to cover their health expenses, right? They can give you the right answer will be like either you pay out of pocket, right? Or you spend down. I'm going to talk about this concept of spending down. You spend down to qualify for Medicaid, or you go home and care for yourself, right? So after day 100, you're kind of in trouble. All right? So again, please remember, don't miss this on your exams. Medicare Part A for a skilled nursing facility, the care you're getting has to be skilled, right? So Medicare Part A does not cover custodial care, right? So like help with activities of daily living like bathing or dressing, where you don't need skilled care for that. Medicare Part A does not cover that. Medicaid does, you know, under some circumstances, but Medicare Part A does not cover that at all. All right. Now, let's talk about Medicare Part B. Medicare Part B, right? So the mnemonic I like to use here is BO, body odor. Body odor, right? Part B covers outpatient services. Part B covers what? Outpatient services, right? So like, you know, outpatient physician visits, outpatient procedures, right? That's a tricky one they love to put on exams, right? Outpatient procedures, right? So if you get like an outpatient, like vasectomy, it's not Part A that's going to cover it. It's a procedure, but it's not Part A it's going to cover it. It's going to be Part B that's going to cover it, right? Preventive services, durable medical equipment, mental health services, right? Some home health, that's all covered by Part B, right? And also ED visits are covered by Part B. ED visits are covered by Part B, right? So the thing is, you know, Part B So I said that Part A doesn't have a monthly premium, but Part B, Medicare Part B, definitely has a monthly premium, right? And it's kind of income adjusted, right? It's kind of income adjusted, right? So the higher you earn, the more you pay. The lower you earn, the less you pay, right? And there's an annual deductible, right? There's an annual deductible that you have to meet before Medicare Part B kicks in, right? And then after that, Medicare covers 80%, right? So there's still that co-insurance of 20% you have to deal with. So hopefully if you were paying attention earlier, you understand exactly what I mean by co-insurance, right? And there's no cap. There's no cap with this. All right. Now, one thing I want you to keep at the back of your mind for exams is, again, we know that our friends at the MBM is the law of preventive medicine, right? The thing is, Part B covers a lot of preventive medicine services at no cost to the patient, right? At no cost to the patient. So they can give you a question about a patient that is getting an annual wellness visit or getting a mammogram or getting a colonoscopy or getting a pap smear or getting screened for diabetes or getting their depression screenings or alcohol misuse screenings, right? Things like this. Medicare covers it 100%. Medicare covers it 100%. And what part of Medicare covers this again? Medicare Part B. Right, guys, please, these integrations are making a very, very high yield to know for your exams. All right. And then next part is Medicare Part C, right? We call this like Medicare Advantage, right? Basically, this is you getting Medicare benefits through a private insurer, although that private insurer has to be CMS approved. It has to be approved by the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, right? So basically, like, you're like, Divine, what does Medicare Part C cover? It pretty much covers everything in Parts A, Parts B, but then you get some extras, right? Like, for example, some of these plans can add, you know, cover like dental services, they can cover vision services, they can cover hearing services, right? And the thing is, one thing you should know, and this is why, before you get a Medicare Part C plan, again, this podcast is for educational purposes only, for exam prep. I'm not teaching this to teach you what to do or what decisions to make with your life. But you better think long and hard before you get a Medicare Advantage plan. Right? I'm not saying you should never get them, but just make sure you know what you're getting before you get it, right? Like, many times, these Medicare Part C plans, you know, they have like a managed care structure, right? You know, like HMOs, PPOs get involved here. We'll talk about that later, right? But the thing is, they have networks, essentially, right? And if you go out of network, you may not get coverage, you may get denied coverage, or your coverage may be very limited, right? So just kind of keep that at the back of your mind, right? And then how about Medicare Part D? Medicare Part D, remember Part D for drugs, Part D for drugs, right? So this is outpatient prescription drug coverage, right? So this is very important to know. When a patient is in the hospital and receiving medication for their ailment, that's covered by Medicare Part A. But if a patient is out of the hospital, they're getting outpatient therapies, outpatient prescription drugs, then that's going to be Medicare Part D. It's going to be Medicare Part D. Okay, it's going to be Medicare Part D, right? And the thing is, for Medicare Part D, its enrollment is completely voluntary, right? Although you got to enroll early, right? If you enroll late, there's typically some kind of penalty you may have to pay, right? But again, remember, Medicare Part D covers prescription drugs, okay? Lock that into your mind. So remember, AI, Part A, inpatient care. Part B, body odor, covers outpatient care and ED visits. And also preventive medicine stuff, right? So like BP, Part B covers preventive medicine stuff. Part C is Medicare Advantage, right? So it covers everything in Part A and B. Sometimes you can add in dental, vision, hearing, and things like that. And then Part D is going to be prescription drugs, okay? Part D is going to be prescription drugs, all right? And then I guess maybe let me just comment on some kind of strange things that may pop up on your exams, right? So there's this thing called a Medigap, right? So look at the name Medigap. It's like a Medicare gap, right? This is like supplemental private insurance that basically covers like the gaps, some of the gaps that exist in traditional Medicare, right? So like all those deductibles I was talking about, those co-insurances I was talking about, those copays I was talking about, Medigap can cover that. Medigap can cover that, right? Medigap can cover that. And this is like, I'm not going to go into detail on this, but there's like Medigap Part A, B, C, D, E, F, G, like up to like N, right? There's just like many different parts of Medigap, right? But yeah, just covers those gaps in Medicare. Just leave it at that. And I think you should be good to go, right? So again, just to summarize, don't mess this up on your exams. Medicare doesn't cover custodial nursing care. The care you get in a nursing home has to be scaled for Medicare to cover it, right? Medicare does not cover routine dental care. It doesn't cover routine vision. doesn't cover routine hearing, right? You got to get Medicare Part C for those, right? Or cosmetic procedures, Medicare does not cover those. They can literally give you a patient, give you one of these things and ask, which of the following insurance plans would likely not cover this person's care or will cover this person's care? Don't pick Medicare Part A or B for any of those, right? So again, those gaps is why people will go for Part C, Medicare Advantage and Medigap. All right, so now let's talk about Medicaid, right? So remember, Medicaid is a joint program. It's a joint program between the federal government and the state government, and it's mostly for low-income individuals and families, right? And one buzzword you want to make sure you can identify for your exam is that Medicaid is means-tested. So you have to be to be eligible for it. It's based on your income and your assets, based on your income in most cases and sometimes your assets, right? So who does Medicaid cover? Well, the thing is, I'll say that know these groups of people and it should be solid for your exams, right? So it covers low-income children, you know, pregnant women, parents that have dependent children, right? People with disabilities, right? And elderly people that, you know, require nursing home care, all these people are covered by Medicaid, right? But if you're an adult and you have no kids, Medicaid actually does not cover you. You're like, really, Divine? Yep. If you're an adult and you have no kids, Medicaid, for the most part, does not cover you, right? So again, they can make that a health equity question on your exams. Whenever you have these gaps that exist, the USMLEs love to test them, right? As they basically make those things health equity questions, right? Now, let's talk about the Affordable Care Act, and maybe I'll, you know, hint on this, at least the relevant parts, later in this, you know, in this series, right? But the Affordable Care Act expanded Medicaid significantly, right? It expanded Medicaid to, like, you know, to adults, you know, up to 138% of the federal poverty level, right? So it basically, it's like the federal government agreed that, hey, you know what, we're going to pay an extended match rate for people that enroll in this expansion, right? But the thing is, this expansion has to be agreed upon by the states. The state has to agree to it. If the state does not agree to it, then you're not going to be able to participate in this expansion, right? So, you know, I think right now about like 40 states or thereabouts, like 40 states and the District of Columbia, I think, have, you know, participated in the expansion, right? But the remaining states did not do that, right? And again, why am I talking about this? It creates a health equity issue. It creates a coverage gap, right? So if, for example, you live in a state that has not, because this expansion is optional for states, right, to agree to this expansion. If you live in a state that is not in agreement with this expansion, right, has not volunteered for it, then if you're not earning enough money, you will not be eligible for this Medicaid expansion, right? That's a coverage gap. That's a health equity issue. Right? So now, let me just do some quick hits on Medicaid. Like, what are some high-yield points to know about Medicaid? Well, again, remember, it can cover long-term care, right? Including nursing home care, right? It can cover care for, like, much longer terms than Medicare can, right? And the thing is, it covers most enrollees. Most people that enroll for Medicaid, it covers them with almost no cost sharing, or if there's cost sharing, is very, very minimal. Like, what do I mean by cost sharing? I mean things like deductibles, co-insurance, and whatnot, right? The cost sharing is pretty minimal. So I know you may be like, wow, Divine, this is amazing. This, wow, minimal cost sharing. This thing is paying up for everything. What is not to like? Well, you're going to see very quickly, especially from the physician perspective, you're going to see very quickly why this is not all it's cracked up to be, right? And then federally qualified health centers, they like to test these on the exams, right? These are, like, you know, health centers set up in, like, rural areas or areas where people have, like, poor access to care. And, you know, many of the patients that these people have are Medicaid patients, right? The thing is, these FQHCs, they get enhanced Medicaid reimbursement, right? These things are like safety net systems for, you know, low-income patients, right? Regardless of the ability to pay, right? So if you work for a federal qualified health center, they tend to get enhanced Medicaid reimbursement, right? And then, what's the physician angle with this, right? Well, the thing is, Medicaid reimburses providers at much, much lower rates than Medicare or private insurance, right? So guess what? Do you think many physicians want to participate in Medicaid? Probably not. So the program is available, right? But will your physician accept it? Will your healthcare provider accept it? That's the big million-dollar question, right? That's the big million-dollar question, right? Now, you may get a kind of weird, super specific question on your exams about who are the highest cost, highest need patients in the Medicaid system. Who are the highest cost, highest need patients in the Medicaid system? These are usually people that are eligible for both Medicare and Medicaid. Make sure you know that for your exams, right? If a person is in a life situation where they're eligible for both Medicare and Medicaid, these are really going to be the people that are really going to draw on the system in terms of just need, in terms of just cost, right? And the thing is, Medicaid typically for these people is going to help with Medicare premiums, is going to help with some of the Medicare cost sharings that those individuals need, right? And then again, the CHIP program, don't forget, the CHIP program, don't forget, it fills the gap for Medicaid. Right? Remember, we don't usually give kids Medicare, right? Except they have what? ALS, which will be weird for a kid, or end-stage renal disease, which can happen, but is rare for a kid, right? But again, that Medicaid gap, right? And it's a joint program as well, right? It's a joint program between the federal government and the state. But the CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, right? It does cover kids that cannot be covered by Medicaid, right? So it has almost no cost sharing, right? Very little co-insurance or co-pay or deductible, right? So again, if they give you a question about a seven-year-old that has no insurance, right? And the parents work, but they cannot afford private healthcare coverage, pick the answer that talks about CHIP. Pick the answer that talks about CHIP. Now, I told you earlier on that I'll talk about this concept known as a spend down, right? Spend down, right? Spend down. So the thing is, this whole concept of spend down is a Medicaid concept. It's a Medicaid concept, right? So say, for example, let's say you have income that is above the Medicaid threshold, right? That is above the Medicaid threshold, right? So it's like, oh no, I'm not eligible for Medicaid. The thing is, you can spend down your excess income on medical bills, right? So it's like, oh, okay, I'm going to be spending down. I'm going to pay up some of my medical bills, right? And then you pay so many medical bills until you get to the qualifying threshold. So let's say Medicaid is only for people that earn under $50,000, but you make like $60,000 a year. You can say, you know what, I'm going to, you know, put like $10,000 to $11,000 towards medical expenses, right? You put it that way. When you do that, you spend down and then voila, you're now under the Medicaid threshold. You're now under the Medicaid threshold, right? They love to test this in the context of like nursing home vignettes. Again, although this kind of question doesn't show up all the time, but sometimes it does, right? So they love to test it in the context of like nursing home vignettes, right? So you see a person that is a nurse in a nursing home. Remember I say that, hey, after like 100 days, you're kind of screwed from a Medicare perspective with like nursing homes, right? Like skilled nursing and facility care, right? So the thing they can test on your exams is they can give you a question about a person that has depleted their savings, right? You know, like they've been in a nursing home for a long time, they've depleted their savings, right? And then they ask you which of the following social insurance programs will most likely essentially pick up the tab for this person's care is going to be Medicaid, right? Because by depleting their savings, the person has basically spent down, right? They've basically spent down till they got to the threshold for Medicaid. Because again, remember, Medicaid is a means tested program. Okay, so I think I've kind of hit public health insurance pretty hard here, and this is almost 30 minutes long, right? So let's go ahead and stop here, right? Again, if you love the way I teach, you love the way I make integrations, you're absolutely going to love my classes, right? I have gotten so many emails recently from people that took my classes, and they've done extremely well on their exams. They'll be like, wow, Divine, before your classes, I was getting the 220s on my practice test. I was failing my practice test. And now I got in the 250s on my real exam. I got in the 260s. I got in the 270s. Like I've literally got in a 270s email recently from somebody that took my review classes, right? So these classes are well put together, right? They are very well put together. I've helped many people and will certainly be able to help you, right? So what are these classes? Well, there's a test taking class that is today. It's actually this evening. It's a 2.5-hour class. It's for step one to step three. And then tomorrow, Wednesday, I have a biostatistics class, 4 hours long. It's for step one to step three. And then on Thursday, I have a social sciences, quality improvement, healthcare systems, and ethics class, right? It's a 5-hour class, a very comprehensive class. It's also for step one to step three. And then this Friday, I have a last minute review that is 3 hours long. That is just for step two and step three. And then starting next week, I have a 20-hour step two, step three class. Very, very helpful class for many, many people. And then the first 2 weeks in June, I have the big kahuna, right? I have the 50-hour step two, step three review. It's an extremely comprehensive review. So many amazing study resources are given out during that class, right? I'm telling you, that's a one-of-a-kind class. It's literally held once a year, right? If you're interested in any of these classes, shoot me an email and I can give you some more information. I also have a 25-hour, you know, basic science review that is for step one, or people taking step two, step three, or poor foundations. And then I also have a step three CCS framework class, right? Step three CCS framework class. So if you're interested in any of these classes, they are all held over Zoom, right? And again, I walk through material in an integrated fashion, right? And the thing is, these classes are not lectures, right? Oh, define this. No, I basically use clinical vignettes the whole time, right? I use context to teach the material because that is more relevant for the exams. It doesn't make sense to say define ACE inhibitors. No, that's insane. No, I'll give you a scenario that talks about a person that, you know, starts on an ACE inhibitor, right? And then they come for follow-up 2 months later and their creatinine has skyrocketed, right? And I'll talk about ACE inhibitors in that context, renal artery stenosis in that context, NSAIDs in that context, right? So like you're going to be learning contextually, which is the optimal way to learn for the exams. All right. And then I also offer one-on-one tutoring for all the USMLE exams, for all the Comlex exams, for all the med school exams as well, right? And then I have this podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify. So check those out. I have a YouTube channel you can also check out as well. And then I also help with ERAS applications, personal statements, mock interviews, and things of that nature, right? I help with editing these things. Again, I have a lot of experience with these. I've worked with people that have got into every discipline from psych to family medicine all the way to neurosurgery. I've even worked with IMGs that have matched into neurosurgery, right? So again, I have a lot of experience with this. For very difficult specialties, I've helped a lot of people with those. So if you're interested, again, just shoot me an email. I can give you some more information. And then many of you listening to this podcast finally know that I'm a Christ follower, right? So every week I post like typically a podcast where from a biblical perspective, I address a life lesson. The website is called divineinterventionlifelessons.com. divineinterventionlifelessons.com. There's actually an Apple podcast associated with that called the Divine Intervention Life Lessons podcast, right? There's like 392 or so episodes on there right now. So if you're interested, just check those out. Many people find it to be very helpful to them. So thank you for listening to me today. So God willing, in the next episode, we'll continue this health insurance podcast, and that's going to be part two. All right. So have a wonderful day. God bless you, and bye for now. Thank you.